right now on Matter of Fact. In this small Midwestern town, you can't help but notice that the Latinx population is booming.
15 years ago, I don't know if anybody knew what a burrito was or a taco. And now you get your choice of lots of places.
What the remarkable transformation of Arcadia, Wisconsin says about the changing face of America. Plus, Los Angeles is producing some of the next big ideas.
I push these entrepreneurs to learn and grow very, very quickly.
Soledad explores the inner workings of a tech hardware accelerator.
We're not looking for a replica of today's great successes. We're looking for tomorrow's great successes.
And too many people living in small towns and on farms don't have a digital connection.
If you don't invest in broadband, you are signing somewhat of a death certificate for the area.
How do we get rural America online?
I'm Soledad O'Brien. Welcome to Matter of Fact. Immigration is changing the face of rural America. The 2020 census shows a big demographic shift. 24% of rural Americans are people of color. Much of that growth is from an influx of immigrants, particularly Latino populations. That trend is evident in Arcadia, a west central Wisconsin town home to nearly 4,000 people. Over the past two decades, the Latino and immigrant population there has swelled, filling an increasing demand for workers in manufacturing and meat processing and dairy. Well, now they outnumber U.S.-born residents. Our correspondent, Jessica Gomez, shows us how the changes are affecting the community.
I always say you don't know where you're going until you know where you came from.
In an old German church turned museum, Carol Berkland is tasked with documenting the history of Arcadia, Wisconsin.
It was Native Americans here. Nothing was here. And then the English came, and then the Polish and the Germans.
The small town settled in the mid-1800s by grain farmers. Today, the face of Arcadia is changing once again.
15 years ago, I don't know if anybody knew what a burrito was or a taco, and now you get your choice of lots of places.
The number of Latino immigrants skyrocketing here over the past two decades. They now make up more than 60% of Arcadia's population. 36-year-old Freddy Rebeletto came here when he was 15, one of only a handful of Mexicans in his high school.
There was no Mexican stores in Arcadia. The sports were different. Now they have soccer. I love soccer, and back then it was football.
He's following in his father's footsteps, a supervisor at a chicken processing plant. Others drawn to Arcadia for jobs in furniture manufacturing, or often on dairy farms.
The growth has been absolutely phenomenal.
Cole Bowick, president of Arcadia's Chamber of Commerce. He says the change has revitalized a once struggling downtown.
One of the statistics is one manufacturing job creates 3.4 additional jobs. And we wouldn't have the restaurants in town, we wouldn't have the retailers in town, would it not be for these large companies here? So if we're unable to fill those open positions, then companies look at, you know, relocating to different areas.
Si uno más aquí.
But the rapidly changing demographic hasn't come without its growing pains. 75% of students in the school district are Latino.
Throw it out.
But only about 10% of teachers are bilingual.
It boils down to just trying to attract more and more teachers that are bilingual. Trying to attract more and more support staff that are bilingual, so that not only are we able to help students access content in their native language while learning English, but also having that ability to communicate with families.
Next year, the district will offer some dual language classes. And Bagstad says declining test scores seen during the biggest influx of immigrants a few years back are now on the rise.
Arrancar el carro.
About 15 miles out of town, farm workers taking a break to learn English.
They feel it's honorable, it's an honorable profession, not just a stepping stone to something else.
Dairy farmer John Rose now says he hasn't had an American-born job applicant in more than a decade.
Would you have a farm if you couldn't hire immigrants?
No, the reality is if these 12 people left There was nothing. The only thing we could do was quit, sell the cows.
So Rose now, like many other employers across the region, relying on workers whose immigration status is often murky.
What we as employers are required to do is we're required to get documentation within 3 days of employment, which we do. Whether they're real or not, we don't know. And so if I had a guess, 95% are undocumented.
That's why some back in Arcadia say it could take another generation for the city to truly adapt. There are still no Latinos on the school board or in elected office.
Sometimes you'll see resistance come in areas of some people don't like change. A lot of times you'll see rural America and small town communities that if you're not changing and you're not adapting, you're dying.
It's change that Freddie and his family say make Arcadia feel like home.
They treat you good. Now there's no difference of no matter what your color skin is. It's we are one community.
I feel Arcadia is well on the way to be a blended community, which means everyone's going to be accepted just like it was in the 1850s.
It's history, Carol Berkland says, in the making. In Arcadia, Wisconsin, for Matter of Fact, I'm Jessica Gomez.
Next on Matter of Fact, many people living in small towns and on farms are desperate for a digital connection.
They just kind of look at me like, where am I? Is this prehistoric?
How do we get rural America online all over again? Plus, an update from the woman who's leading the next wave of manufacturing for entrepreneurs in Los Angeles. And later, this jacket combines style and function. Find out who inspired this auto-assisted hoodie. You're watching Matter of Fact, America's number one nationally syndicated public affairs news magazine.
Most of us take our broadband access for granted. We can work remotely, we can schedule food deliveries, we can use video visits to check in with our doctors, we can help our kids with their homework online. At least that's the story in most urban areas. But in rural America, digital deserts are a widespread reality. Places where high-speed internet is either unavailable, unreliable, or just too slow. The FCC estimates around 15 million rural residents don't have access. Our correspondent, Dina Demetrius, visited Phillips County, one of the poorest in Arkansas, where neighbors are working to join the digital age.
In the heart of the Mississippi Delta, the small agricultural town of Elaine, Arkansas, is a picture of historic divides, racial, economic, and now digital.
This is the north side of town where it's predominantly black, and this the south side that's predominantly white.
Lisa Hicks Gilbert is trying to bridge those divides with fiber optics.
So nothing works without the internet,
right.
And definitely nothing works without internet that's reliable.
Last year, Gilbert returned to her hometown from Little Rock and is now program manager of a local nonprofit addressing rural disparities. She says when the pandemic hit, the slow service from the town's only provider practically brought it to a standstill.
You had some people who had lost their jobs. They're trying to maybe sell jewelry, you know, get an online business. The children are trying to do homework. You realize how inadequate the service is.
Laying fiber lines in rural areas is costly. The smaller customer base means a smaller return on investment. That leaves rural communities in the dust.
Elaine has just been getting crumbs, and we can no longer allow that to continue to happen.
Feeling the pain of her community's stagnation, Gilbert found a benefactor who pays for free internet on one block of Main Street. It's beamed from right across the river in Mississippi to these devices on buildings and Elaine's water tower.
So how much has this free Wi-Fi helped people and changed mm-hmm. their lives?
Well, even when we have some of our students that come, but their internet service goes out, they can come up here and finish the work they need to have done. Our vendors will be able to access the internet and be able to make those Cash App, PayPal, Venmo, whatever sales.
For Candace Williams, an executive director at Rural Community Alliance, and her 9-year-old son, Caleb, lack of internet service during the pandemic forced them to drive a half hour each way daily to Helena for Caleb's virtual school.
I would have to go
to McDonald's to use their free Wi-Fi. I would just sit in the parking lot.
Now William's family switched to a hotspot, but it eats up data quickly, costing her up to $200 a month to buy more gigs.
Why can't we connect people to the outside world with that service that they need, and it's not a significant amount of their income?
Heading up to Helena, its residents don't fare much better. At least 40% can't get online reliably.
We have got a divide in everywhere in rural America. When you add access, quality internet access, you take that divide and you fill it up this much.
Nancy McKee tries to lure new businesses and life to Phillips County.
Would you say broadband and the lack of it is pretty much the nail in the coffin with every conversation you have?
And they say, well, which of these buildings has, you know, pretty good fiber in? And I'm like, none, zero. They just kind of look at me like, what, where am I? Is this prehistoric?
It would cost $550 million to finish covering Arkansas with fiber, and many rural officials don't have time to pursue federal and state broadband grants. McKee says it's time for a federally funded work program to lay that fiber.
There's a job for 10 years, and on top of that, because you, all of a sudden, you're growing, right? What happens when you grow? Oh, we get a new neighborhood. Oh, well, you get a whole new development area.
Development that would mean higher paying jobs so people can grow in small towns.
As we reimagine our lives and our futures here in Elaine, it's going to have to start with broadband. And that's what we have to fight for.
In Phillips County, Arkansas, I'm Dina Demetrius for Matter of Fact.
Next on Matter of Fact, meet the Los Angeles-based investor behind some of the next big ideas for tech devices.
What is success for you?
A candid conversation about creating opportunity for inventors who others often overlook. And later, these rodents are not your average rats. How they're being trained to rescue people trapped in rubble.
Welcome back to Matter of Fact. What gets made in LA is way more than just movies. In fact, if you're talking about jobs, the Los Angeles area is the largest manufacturing hub in the country. 5 years ago, we paid a visit to a Los Angeles business accelerator helping tech hardware creators get their ideas into production. Back then, Make in LA was investing in 15 companies. Eventually, they were able to back 23 founders in the tech hardware space. Here's a look at one of those startups, Rufus, a company making wearable warehouse technology.
The purpose of this is for workers in construction or third-party logistics warehousing to wear this device. And in the background, what we're doing is understanding the behavior of the worker.
Why did you go to Make in LA? How did that happen?
You know, we're based out of Los Angeles, and it was really, one, nice to find an accelerator that's focused on hardware, because that's pretty rare. They have the mentors, the resources, and all these things that can kind of help us get there. It was really important as a hardware company to get that stuff right.
Rufus currently has 50 enterprise customers in their pipeline with 2,000 units pre-ordered. But for that to happen, he and his team had to get past Sean Arora and the extremely intense training at Make in LA.
I am making them question everything that they thought they knew about the product. When I look at entrepreneurs, I overlook the stuff that generally biases investors. Are they a minority? Are they a woman? Do they have a stutter? Whatever it is that causes an investor to pass, we are able to look beyond that. We're not looking for a replica of today's great successes. We're looking for tomorrow's great successes.
Carmen Palafax is a general partner at Mila Capital, which invested in the companies mentored by Make in LA. She's also the founding partner of the venture capital firm 2045 Ventures. I caught up with her on a recent trip to LA.
Carmen, it's so nice to see you. It's been a really long time. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
And it's great to see you too.
So in the 5 years since we did that interview, give us an update. What's been happening with Rufus?
Considering the fact that we've gone through a pandemic, supply chain issues, our companies have survived and done well. Rufus, in particular, creates wearable technology for the warehouse worker, and they're in three different countries, US, Canada, and Europe.
Wow, fantastic. How about other success stories? What is success for you?
Success is seeing these companies, you know, grow and scale. And many of them are scaling rapidly now and solving critical issues in mental health, in climate, and across all different sectors.
Connect the investment in this, you know, the hardware tech startups to actual employment.
VC-backed companies create 8 times more jobs than non-VC-backed companies. So this is a critical stat because when you are employed in a tech startup that's VC-backed, you have skills that you can then transfer on to other positions or start your own venture.
You have started your own venture firm, and we know how few venture dollars go to people of color across the board, and specifically women of color.
You know, that's where I see the biggest opportunity. Our country is changing, and so the name of the firm is 2045 Ventures, because 2045 is the year there won't be a racial majority in the United States. That's already true in 5 states. In Los Angeles, 50% of the population are people of color. 30% are foreign born. Yet there is very little capital that is going to founders that are female, that are underrepresented. And what the simple solution is more capital to investors of color, like myself, that can then go out into the community and greenlight these opportunities.
Carmen Palafax, nice to see you.
Coming up on Matter of Fact, rats with backpacks? How these tiny creatures are being trained to save lives. And still ahead, a robot hoodie making an important fashion statement.
It's a jacket that can raise and lower the hood at the push of a button.
To stay up to date with Matter of Fact, sign up for our newsletter at matteroffact.tv.
The recent earthquake in Turkey and Syria reminds us when disasters strike, buildings can collapse and trap people in the rubble. Search and rescue teams work nonstop trying to locate survivors. But that's not always enough. Now, future efforts could be aided by new technology that enlists the unlikely help of rats. A Belgian nonprofit called Apopo is equipping rodents with tiny, high-tech backpacks that can record video images and sound from under the rubble. These aren't just typical rats. They are African giant pouched rats. They weigh about 3 pounds, and they're 2 to 3 feet long. The rodents are being trained in Tanzania. That training involves the rats finding the victim, pulling a switch on their vests, and the technology in their backpack then triggers a beeper, sending information to pinpoint the location of the victim. Then the rats return to the base. It's estimated that it'll take at least 9 to 12 months to train each rat before they're able to help.
Next on Matter of Fact, a hands-free hoodie made to last.
It held up after 20 wash cycles, and it survived being run over by a truck.
A look at fashion designed for function.
And finally, a hoodie designed to help people whose movements are impaired by a disability. It's a jacket that can raise and lower the hood at the push of a button without the help of electronics or batteries. Dan Preston, a Rice University mechanical engineer, led the team that created the jacket to function as a soft robot. Here's how it works. Small inflatable pouches are connected to soft tubes inside the jacket. When you press the button on the jacket, air flows from a canister of carbon dioxide through the pouches. The pouches fold and unfold to form kinks that can inflate or deflate an airbag in the hood, making it go up and down. The jacket's made of flexible materials chosen for durability. It is washing machine friendly and has held up through 20 wash cycles. And it survived being run over by a truck, which hopefully would never happen outside of testing. The next phase is to test the jacket in clinical trials to see how it could be used in medical settings. Mass production could take 5 to 10 years. The team says this is a first step in creating clothing that reacts to a person's needs, a fashion trend they hope will blow up. That's it for this edition of Matter of Fact. I'm Soledad O'Brien, and we'll see you back here next week.